Get started for today. Today's topic primarily, so today we're going to wrap up our discussion of Pshara and Din. Let me say one other thing. The schedule going forward in terms of topics, and we're going to finish Pshara and Din. Then I want to spend one day analyzing the Achronim and their issue with the Ramah on our Sugya. The Ramah's Psak and Siman Yedayin deriving from Runya, that if you're Toveya a certain amount, the Dayanim shouldn't award more than that amount, which is one of the main features of the Sugya. So I want to spend a day just looking at the Sma, the Shach, the Sos, the Tumim, the Nesivis, and the Pischei Tshuva on that discussion. Very much a Shulchan Aruch day, just to see how everybody gets very worked up about the Ramah and what exactly the Ramah is saying. That'll be right after the Pshara Din discussion. Then I think it's worthwhile for us to spend, I would say, about 2 shiurim or so on the second case of Runya, the Dina de Bar Metzra part, and Lefnim Mishuras Adin, which is part of that discussion. That sound reasonable? Yeah. And then after that, we get to that. We jump. You'll do the Shaka Bataria, but we get to Dapa. All right. Any objections to that plan? Colty, it's good.
Sounds good.
Okay, Romy, it's good. Yeah? Not so good, or?
No, fine.
Yeah? Any objections to doing the Dina de Bar Metzra part of Runya? We could skip it if we want. It's just nice to, like, the distinction between Din and Lefinim Mishuras HaDin is a very important question. It touches on a lot of themes that we've already discussed in Pshara, and themes we're going to see later on. So it's worthwhile to just tackle it head on. So, Shmuel, it's good? Yeah, great. So let's start with the relationship between Din and Pshara. We ended last time discussing the distinction between Pshara that's done against the will of the Bali Din and Pshara that's done with the consent of the Bali Din. Does everybody remember this? We had Josh's very nice reading of the Gemara, right? Brunya and Daf Hayam and Aleph, about what was going on there. Today I want to look into this this deeper question, not about the relationship between paskening according to Din and paskening according to Pshara, not these two different methods and when does one come in and when does the other come in. Today I'm interested in when does Pshara itself take the form of Din and when does Din take the form of Pshara. In other words, when do these two different categories, which we treated differently thus far, when do they converge and the category distinction get blurred? Does that resonate with you guys from seeing the sources? Yeah? Okay. That's the agenda for today. So let's start with the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Yud Beis Sif Hei. What does the Shulchan Aruch tell us? What does the Shulchan Aruch tell us here? Benji, you want to tell us what Shulchan Aruch says? Yishkoach?
Yishkoach le-din la-sor din.
Yishkoach le...
Le-dayan
la-sor din. Let me make this a little bigger. I'm going to make this even bigger. Okay. Here we go.
Meaning that that they're able to paskin din ke'enach shara, whatever that means. That's like kind of like shara. Meaning it's not shara, but it is din, but it's din that's like influenced by shara.
So I'm not sure I agree with your characterization. Say it again. Yesh koch ledayin lasos din ke'ena pshara.
Right. Meaning that the din is not necessarily pshara. The din is din. But the way that they came about the din is through, you know, looking at it like it's pshara. Meaning that calculations were not, Shofar, like, Hoshe Mishpat calculations. They were like,
I'm just going to, again, register. I'm not sure I agree with that formulation. Anybody agree with Benji's formulation? Benji? Shmuel, you agree? Hey, you like it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You mind just, like, repeating again?
Say a little more. Say a little more, Benji.
Okay, sure.
That the dialogue comes up with the din in that they don't, it's not necessarily, like, kosher mishpat calculations.
Don't say too much. Don't say too much.
Give me another parsing on what you think is going on here.
Yishkalta dain maso din kein apshara. Let's finish the sentence and go back.
Right? In a case where they don't have enough evidence to really adjudicate the...
Yeah. Where they can't... Good. Where they don't have enough evidence to get to the bottom of things. It's not clear to me if that means the evidence in the of the facts of the case, or whether it means evidence as in there's not enough halachic data to determine how the halacha applies to this case. It's actually not so clear from that statement of the Shulchan Aruch. What does that mean?
That they can't come up with a din.
What does that mean? Rasha lechutzi hadin cholak mitachas yado. You can just translate the words.
They don't have the ability.
Yeah, they're not permitted.
To lahotzi din, I guess, to like come up with a psak din.
I think din here means to throw out the case.
To throw out the case, cholik mitachas yado, right? That they have to come up with a din. They can't just throw up their hand and say, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, they have to close the case. Right? They have to impose a resolution on it. Yes?
Right.
So the way I understand this piece here is that the Shulchan Aruch saying a dayan has the power to do din via pshara. That's how I take it. Meaning?
Is that different than what I was saying?
Depends on what you were saying, but not necessarily different. Not necessarily different, Benji. Is that what you were getting at?
I think so. Maybe I was just saying it wrong.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure I understand what I'm saying either until we persistify it further. And it's a very hard phrase, right? Because we have these two different concepts, din and pshara. And the Shulchan Aruch says, sometimes a dayan could do din as pshara. So what does that mean? Right? When the case is not, cannot be determined through the principles of din. That's how I understand the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? So the key point is that there are certain cases where the din is to impose a pshara. That's how I parse this Shulchan Aruch. Anybody disagree with that parsing? And so there are certain cases where the din is for the court to impose a pshara on the case. So there's a set of psharas that are in fact an application of din. Ned, you have a thought on this?
I'm saying it's like the Gemara of what's din sheish b'shara. How the Gemara said,
yeah, maybe it relates to that Gemara. That's possible. But the key point here is that we're blowing up the distinction between din and pshara, or at least the you might distinguish between these two things. So there's let's talk about the conceptual distinction versus practical. So there's a difference between the... How do you spell practical? Did I spell it right?
You're just missing a C.
At the end?
No.
How do you spell it?
Before the C.
I guess?
Yeah.
There's an E here?
Yeah.
I said C before.
Like that?
Yeah.
Oh, is that missing a C?
Yeah.
Okay. So, there's a distinction between the practical and the conceptual. Obviously, this is what Benji, I think, was struggling with. At the practical level, the Shulchan Aruch is saying that they only do pshara. But at the legal conceptual level, meaning what type of rule is being applied, it's a rule of din. Right? Does that maybe help us a little bit, Benji?
Yeah.
So, yesh koach adayin lasos din kein apshara. This word din is actually operating at the legal conceptual level. Right? What type of adjudication, what type of legal power is the court using? Practically, how are they practically resolving the case and assigning rights to either party? There, they're using a method of pshara. Make sense? I think that distinction is helpful. Yeah. Everybody in agreement? Okay. So this blows up the hard... This blows up any contention that there's a hard distinction between Din and Pshara, or that they're absolutely at odds with each other. What does the Sma add to this analysis? The Sma and Siman Yud Beis, if Katan Beis? He quotes the Tshuvas Arash, which is the source of this, which we'll look at inside. Sari, what does he add?
Yeah, so, the Tshuvas Arash was kind of specifying what does it mean to aim Pshara, so a few different options, whether you can say it's either it's through kind of like, say, rayos that are not necessarily like, you know, admissible to solidify the din, but, you know, the din you can kind of somewhat more subjectively trust it, or like some sort of the das that they do. They can also do something kind of arbitrary, which is most sure dining, Pshara, which is, I guess, more literally a compromise.
Okay, so read us, if you, so then yeah, just read us this part of the...
Okay,
this.
So Rosh, Sim
okay, stop for a second. So why? So what's going on there? So the Torah gives the Chamin give Rishus to court to paskin by their own evaluation, by their own assessment. Okay. What's the underlying value there? Why does that make sense?
I kind of read like the end of the Shulchan Aruch. Since they're not allowed to leave the din unresolved, if the din can't be resolved through rayos, it must be resolved another way.
Yeah. And what does that value speak to?
You know, we want to resolve this conflict.
Yeah, the importance of just resolving disputes. So you can see the Shulchan Aruch is saying, in Siman Yud Beis, it's very important to resolve disputes, so it can't be that any time din is indeterminate, we just throw up our hands and allow the dispute to continue. So there's got to be some other way of putting an end to the dispute, to extinguish it. And that's why the Rush then says, which is Sma cites, if din is indeterminate, there's got to be some other way to extinguish the dispute. How do you
extinguish the dispute? So he gives us a few methodologies.
Pamin the omen the das, just kind of like estimation.
Yeah, estimation, right? So just...
comes up all the time, like, oh, like, there's two star and Mahira, we don't know who we really sold it to, so to them, it's like, all right, which of these Lukulos did the seller like more, and probably sold to them.
Yeah. Yeah, so just some sort of assessment.
Yeah. Moshe Yira Hadayin, below Tom, below Raya, below Medadas, and Shu Hadayin.
So what's that?
Just totally arbitrary.
Totally arbitrary, right? Sometimes the value of extinguishing disputes is so great that an arbitrary resolution is better than no resolution. Do we agree with that?
What's an example of like an arbitrary
resolution? An arbitrary resolution? Meaning what's a type of case where an arbitrary resolution is? Whenever the Gemara talks about shooting the daini, according to him, that's an arbitrary resolution. Literally the judge just decides arbitrarily. Right?
The judge doesn't give me so much. Arbitrary is that's not like... It's not based about judgment, though. Right?
Below Tom, below Raya, below Omer Adas.
Like, I like this guy's shirt, so I don't want to go with him.
Yeah, by hypothesis, that you know he's first in the alphabet, so he gets it. Or he's last in the alphabet. Right?
Sure. Okay.
You don't like that?
I mean, it's so crazy.
Yeah. You might say it's not an ideal type of dispute resolution, but at least it resolves the dispute. Right? So why should, when you get to an intersection, why should the person on the right get to go first? Is that the rule?
Yeah.
Right, when you're at a four-way stop sign? It's an arbitrary, whoever gets there first, but if you get there at the same time, you defer to the person on the right.
If everyone's on the right.
What?
What if everyone's on the right? As it's four-way, four people go.
Yeah, you have to have some other rule then, right?
Cold.
Yeah. But sometimes you just need an arbitrary rule, and that's good enough to extinguish the dispute. And so by hypothesis, the Rush says that. It says, Pamim Kemoshi Yerdayim, below Tam, below Raya, below Menadas. Right? Romy, you had a hand on this?
Yeah, I just think it's like, just to back up Zolti's point, it's not exactly like, you know, the driving thing, because there's one rule in all cases when anyone comes to that situation. And this suggests that if one day, you know, me and Benji come with this you know, dispute, and they resolve it one way based on whatever, random things, and then 2 days later, 12 people can come with the same exact dispute, it will be resolved a different way.
Right.
So it's not like there's a uniform rule for all of these situations. That's
except the uniform rule is that it's arbitrary. Meaning there are some cases where there, I guess there's just really no principled way to resolve it, so then it becomes, the rule is to do it arbitrarily.
Right, and then when we get to this, an arbitrary solution is better than no resolution, does that even resolve the dispute?
That's a factual question on the rush, but you could see at least what he's getting at, right? And I think that speaks to the importance of, bringing a resolution to the case, right? And what's the last type of principle that he has, Zacharia? Yeah, and sometimes by compromise, by, I guess, splitting it in half or, spreading it around between the parties. So how many different principles does he have here? How many does he have, including the brackets? 3. Either omid adas, arbitrary, or through pshara. Okay? And he adds, this is the most important line of the Sma. This is a nice, important clarification of the Rush himself. What does he add in this last line, Zacharia?
So the Shulchan Aruch's intent when he says he has a koa, it means he has a koa to do it against their will.
Yeah, so this is the most important line in the Sma, because here we already move beyond the main question that we're tackling today, the main question being blowing up the distinction between Pshar and Din. But we get further insight into actually the nature or the application of pshara. Until now, we saw two types of pshara, two types of principles of pshara. What were the two principles that we saw so far? Benji?
Consent and fairness.
Consent, which type is consent? I mean, that for pshara...
I mean, that it has to be an agreement. They have to both agree to it, that you can't do it by force.
Yes, so until now we saw that pshara requires the Balei Din to authorize the Bez Din. Pshara from the Dayanim may ratzon a Balei Din.
Oh, and they can still choose to reject that.
Well, at this point, the idea is that the Balei Din come to Bez Din, Bez Din says, you want Din or pshara? And they say, oh, we want pshara. So they authorize the Bezdin to do pshara. That's one type.
Right.
But then we saw a second type, which is
Kuzma Beitin.
Yeah, the Riaz's point that there's a type of pshara that the Balei Din do themselves. Right. Maybe the Dayan suggests it to them, but it's something that they consent to the actual parameters and content of the settlement on their own. That's a mitzvah according to everybody, according to the Riaz and the Shach. Right. So. This is a pshara that's actually accepted. The content is accepted by the Balei Din. So, it's really just between the litigants themselves that they work out the content of the pshara. The Sma and the Rush are telling us what? That there's a third species of pshara where the Balei Din have no input into the content. You don't need their consent for the actual settlement. You don't need their consent to authorize the Bez Din to do pshara. There are some cases where halacha gives the Bez Din the power to do pshara without the input or consent of the Balei Din. So we get this whole new category of pshara, which is actually quite radical. Right? You might say category 1 and 2 are not radical at all. The halacha gives you rights, and you're not going to lose those rights unless you do something to waive them. You settle, or you empower the Bezin to settle for you. Once you get to this principle of the Rosh, the Shulchan Aruch, and Yud Beis, you get a pretty radical principle that sometimes the Bezin itself could just impose a pshara. So we want to try to explicate that idea. Josh?
It sounds to me that Lasso Din Kain of Shara is kind of saying that this is still in category 1 or something. Like, they came and gave the Bezin the right to passing din, and it happens to be in this case the din of shara, but it's still that they gave him the right, like that.
Well, I think it's whatever right a bezin has to do din in general
just gets extended to shara.
Authorizes them to do shara in this case. That's the whole beauty of saying that they're doing din came shara, right? They're using their din power to impose a resolution that practically takes the form of a pshara. Yeah. So it's actually, if you think of this in terms of the jurisprudential principle, it's really a radical, it's a radical principle. And you don't have it, arguably you don't have it explicitly until the Rush and the Shulchan Aruch and the Sma's explication of that explicitly, that this is a power that the Beis Din has, Bal Karcha Chad the Balei Dinim. Yes?
I mean, in American courts, doesn't the judge decide the sentencing? And that can be a little random as well.
Oh, super, super random. That's super random.
Like, why is that very different than this?
Why is...
This very different than that.
I don't know that it's so different from that, except that I think in the American system you did, the sentencing is not a pshara. Sentencing is... Because first of all, those are criminal-type cases, not civil cases between two people. But you might say sentencing is just part of the rules of litigation. Right? So I don't know. I wouldn't characterize sentencing as a type of pshara. There's plenty... If you want to talk about arbitrariness in legal systems, yeah, it's not unique to halacha that there's a omid hadas. That's certainly not unique. I think what's striking here is if you look at, you know, oh, the Gemara says they got to give the Beis Din power to do pshara, or they got to accept it on their own. But now you have a principle that says that it's a power the Beis Din has automatically. I think that's what's unique about this. Josh?
I mean, I don't know if you said this already, but why is it not just that there's some kind of authorization that's happening? So in the first case, yeah, it's the actually Balei Din that are authorizing Beis Din to do that. And now, you know, the fact that there's no other way is authorizing Beis Din. It's not like, I don't see that it's so inconsistent.
Yeah, I don't think it's problematic. But the authorization comes through the Beis Din's power of Din. Are you disagreeing with that, or?
No, I agree with that.
Right. So I don't think it's radical.
But only in a case where they can't, like...
Yeah. So the point is that it's limited.
Where the practice... Yeah.
Yeah. So there are certain limits to this principle.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So in application, it may not be so broad, because it depends on the antecedent fact of... There's no other way to resolve the case.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Shmuel.
I mean, I really like this point. This might be what you're saying, but more fleshed out. Like, the second they show up in court and decide, okay, we're going through with this, it's they've given the power over to the Dayanim to do whatever needs to be done. In which case, it's not super different from number one.
Yeah.
Because they showed up in court and then said, at the onset, like, hey, do you want to do pshara? And, like, I guess they need a formal consent at the beginning there, but by the end of the case, they don't need any consent.
But let's say they say, we want to do din. Right? Let's say they say, we hate pshara, we want to do din. And then it's a case that Shana Dabar Yachal is Fire Barayas.
They've given over their rights to...
Because they're doing... Because it's part of...
They're in Beis Din.
Right, and I'm still saying there's... The Beis Din here is using its conceptual din powers... Right, not its pshara powers to impose the resolution. Right, do you see that? I mean, to me, that's the philosophically significant point. Let's just think of it, if you want to be crude, Beis Din has two powers. They have power to do din, they have power to do pshara. They need special authorization to do pshara. Okay? The beauty of this case is that they're doing pshara through their authority to do din. That's how I think of it.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Right. What?
I don't disagree.
Right, but I'm saying that's a chiddush.
Yeah.
If you look at this through the lens of din, and you say, "Well, there are so many dinim in the Gemara. Pshara is one of those dinim." Then, of course, it's very straightforward. If you look at this through the lens of pshara as this aberration,
right.
And it's very strange. Well, I thought pshara requires consent. Blah 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 blah.
Do you think it's impossible to put the first category into the din application of they're filling din through pshara?
I mean that so there's this pshara. Thing could be.
Yeah.
A type of din?
Yeah.
But this could be a type of din?
Yeah.
Personally, I am so far away from Ned that I think it's possible.
Well,
right. Ned's ancestor that was here in Shear a few weeks ago. Yeah, right. I'm just kidding, Ned. You know I'm joking. But I think that's conceivable. And that's something we want to look at a little more closely actually today. Roman, did you have a hand on that? Oh, Benji.
I was just going to ask, in a case where there's not enough arias, there is a din. You say I'm looking for a chaver or a lover aria. That, you know, goes to, you know, you just adjudicate that. Like, the din is that he doesn't have to pay.
Well, I think you're giving too much weight to motzei mechaver al baraya then. Right, you're assuming that motzei mechaver al baraya will cover all the cases.
In the case of the lack of baraya, yeah.
So the Rush clearly disagrees, right? He's thinking that there's going to be a large set of cases that a motzei mechaver, either because no cheskas mamon,
right,
or because there's reasons not to apply cheskas mamon, but in all those cases, you do din kein apshara.
Right.
See, I think it gets a little tricky because it's not totally clear what the standard is to say that there's no din applicable here, now we appeal to pshar, right? It's not really clear what level of suffix is required.
We're saying that there's like a suffix within the halachic system itself, not about the Mishias.
Yeah, right. That, I think we'll see that explicitly, and then it's it. Okay, everybody good so far? Romy, do you have a hand also?
I was just going to say that if you don't frame it the way that you did, that Bezin has two powers of Shara and Din, like I could have also, you could say, Bezin doesn't have a power of Shara, except when they can't make any resolutions, in which case, if you're even calling it Shara, they resolve it through more like obscure methods or whatever.
Yeah.
And when we say, oh, Bezin has other power of Shara that requires consent, it's actually not
the same type
that they have the power of Shara. It's really just that they, if you tell them to do things a certain way, they can do things in a different
way. It's a power of contract, not a power of Shara, right? It's like, we could agree to everything, anything. We could agree to have a third party impose a... Yeah, so that's true. Then you're getting more philosophical. So, let me just put it this way. Romy's raising a really excellent question. When we talk about Shara itself, is Shara a koach bezdin, or is it a koach of the Bali din? The thought being, if it's a koach of the Bali din, it's really a principle of kinyan. Right, it's a principle of contract in halacha. And if you're thinking of it in terms of a koach bezdin, then it's a principle of adjudication, two types of adjudication. Right? Anybody have a thought on what's the better way to think of it? My intuition is to think of it, so like the Shulchan Aruch, for example, talks about Pshara and Siman Yud Beis, which is, it's on the board.
The din came from?
Well, no, the din, all of Pshara is in Hilchos Yud Beis, right? What's Hilchos Yud Beis and what's Siman Yud Beis in Choshen Mishpat?
Dayanim?
Yeah, it was Dayanim.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's the rules of courts and the appealer is there. It appears in Masechet Sanhedrin.
No, but that might be because, oh, you're saying, all you not, you know.
So I'm saying, like, I'm okay saying, so I'm totally okay saying that this thing that the Riaz talks about, of the Pshara between the parties, where they agree on the parameters, that's kinyan, that's contracts. Right? Bezin's just a background factor in bringing that about. Rumi's then saying, well, maybe this is the number one, where the Bali didn't give the Bezin Rishus, is actually also a principle of contract, not a principle of Bezin. Right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way of thinking about it. Whereas the way I'm framing it is, Shara is a koach bezdin. We're trying to figure out how does it relate to the koach bezdin of din. Yeah, I think that's a very helpful way of even taking a step back into where Shara falls on this question. It's really a separate question about the nature of Shara.
Right. You could say that this thing, this most recent form of Shara that we're talking about, operates to that power of din, and the first two just don't.
Yeah, so this is the only koach bezdin of Shara.
That's right. Right.
Yeah, I hear that. That's certainly a way of looking at it. For our purposes, I think if we were tackling the power of bezdin question, that would be a central line of inquiry. From our perspective, now, Morrison, what's the relationship between Shara and din? So I don't think it's so important for us to take a stand on whether, it's this koach bezdin versus that koach bezdin, Shara koach bezdin versus din koach bezdin. Because what I'm really interested in is the relationship between din and Shara, not the overall powers of bezdin.
Okay.
You know, it's like a similar question of bezdin makim onj shlomen adin. Is that a power of bezdin or some communal leadership thing? And then people say, oh, there are two powers. There's a mishpat hamelech power, that like a political power that bezdin has, and then a judicial power. Yeah, that would be a similar type of inquiry. Shmuel.
This is getting on the tangent of the contractual idea, so feel free to come in short. Isn't sort of the whole idea of Din just enforcing contracts?
Like, no.
The fact that we're,
I think you have to think that a court has separate jurisdictional power to resolve disputes. It's not that we got together in 1776 and, you know, all contractually agreed to have courts preside over us. Maybe it is.
Okay.
That's already a different type of that's like an inquiry into political theory about like where do courts get their powers from. In which case Rumi's distinction collapses.
Exactly.
That was right? Because courts themselves only have their power through the contract of people appointing them. Right, so what do we care if it was the people in 1776 who appointed them, or the two Bali Din who show up and appoint them in this case to have the power?
Right.
So you're saying all of Din is just the power of contract.
Right. In which case I don't really like the distinction. But.
Right. I think in halacha it's a little more difficult to sustain that. Unless what we'll see later on is like the Rivash and the Rishonim who say, you know, even the Torah itself only has normative force because we accepted it at our Sinai. Right, and then you'll say, oh, everything depends on the power of contract. We'll see some Rishonim say that later on. I mean, they say that. They probably don't mean it, but... Okay. Daniel, you had a comment before we... We are at like two sources today, right?
Yeah, I'm just curious, is it possible to read the whole theory of Bakarapha in the like the paradigm of Shara's the Kenyan for Bali Din?
What do you mean it's a Kenyan?
As in, like, you're saying that the whole concept of Shara, I guess, of... I've heard we just talked about it, that you can look at Shara in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, Rumi's way.
Right. So I'm saying, is it possible to go with Bakarapha?
As a Kenyan also? I think even Rumi doesn't want to say that.
Right.
Right.
What you want us to say is a totally separate case then? It's different.
Me? Rumi would say this is a different species of Pshara. There's Pshara as contract and there's Pshara as Koach Din. I agree with the plurality of species thing. I'm just saying there's two species of Koach Bez Din. So on the fact of it being two species, we're not in disagreement. Just how you want to conceptualize the Kenyan versus Bez Din. Or is it within Bez Din two different powers?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's what
I'm doing. Good. Okay, so let's look at the Rush. The Rush, sorry, you want to give us a little background on what was going on in this dispute since Noah?
Yeah, so
you guys seem to have.
I went through the whole thing, but I know some parts of it. Apparently, there's this dispute between two Jews where, like, I didn't see the whole thing. Pretty much, it ended up being, like, adjudicated in a few different courts, and then, like, the queen got so upset that, like, this was, like, bouncing around, so she just, like, sent all, like, the...
issues.
All the documents and all the older decisions to the Rush and says, you decide.
Yeah.
Just figure it all out. So it's
yeah.
A huge...
yeah, and we get this really important, I mean, principle that comes out of this case, right, of the Rush being asked to decide it. And he basically says, I'm not going to apply din, or I'm not going to apply, there's no real din that would govern this. And he creates this area of halachic jurisprudence that, v'chein matzina b'gemara, shenitan koach l'dayan, lasos din ke'en apshar. That's where the Shulchan Aruch borrowed the phrase from this tshuva, klal kuf zayin zimin vav. And he gets into an analysis of the gemara in Hamafkid. But Mitzvah and Beis and the Beis as the source for this halacha. So did everybody get a chance to see that Gemara in Bab Mitzvah? Great little story. What are the key facts of the story here? Dov, did you get to see that story?
Parts of it, but not full.
Okay, anybody get a chance to see the story in full? Benji.
That the Obitrochus basically buys like a cow for the Mitzvah.
Yeah.
Gives it to... like some cattle guy expert in order to take care of it. But then the cow that he bought, like the teeth were all messed up, so it wasn't able to eat.
Yeah. No good teeth. Right.
So then the cow died. And then the question is, who's to blame? So
yeah, who's going to be sued, right? And who's going to cover the cost of this animal dying?
Right. So they sue the apotropos because you know he's in charge of making sure that the totem are well taken care of. And he said, well, I deferred to an expert. So
yeah.
I asked him, and he said, well, I didn't Like, I just fed it, like, normally, and I didn't realize its teeth were all messed up, so...
Yeah, so who has the duty to check the horse's teeth,
right,
or the cow's
they,
teeth?
They backed it back up to the guy that originally sold them.
So we had the seller.
Right, so then they backed back up to the seller.
And then we had the cattle hand.
Yeah, and then...
What are they called?
Ranchers.
So, the Gemara ends up saying it was the cattle hand versus the rancher.
Right. But then it turned out that the...
And the important fact of the case also is that the seller is really like a
he's
sort
a
of...
He's a white-collar guy. He's not...
Yeah, he's a... Exactly. he's a cow flipper.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't really spend so much time. He buys them and sells them in the same day.
Right.
As the Gemara said. So it's the seller versus the rancher. The seller had to reimburse the Yisomim. Right?
Right.
But then he sues...
Rancher.
Is it right that the seller has to reimburse the Yisomim? Yeah.
Yeah.
The seller reimburses the Yisomim.
Or he does. It's not clear.
Yeah. And then he sues the rancher.
Right.
According to Gemara's Maskana, that's the case.
Right.
So, who's in the right? Who's in the wrong? The seller sold a defective cow, so he reimburses the Yisomim. Could he recover from the rancher who failed to inspect the teeth and make sure that they're well fed?
And then also that the Yisomim are Laban Mechila.
So before you get there. So what does the Gemara say? What happened? What was the ruling?
What's it called? That since that he didn't, there wasn't considered Mekach Tov on the seller's part, then it's the responsibility of the rancher.
The rancher's got to pay how much?
Just the value of the meat of the ox.
Yeah, so it is. He gives over the skin is still recoverable,
right.
But he pays the basar bizul amount. So the lost, some discounted rate of the lost value of the meat from the animal dying. Yes, Benji?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the issue? If you read this Gemara, would this raise your, would you be curious? Like, is this a problematic ruling?
Yeah, it doesn't seem that, I mean, the fact, why should it matter? If we say that the rancher's not responsible originally, and we say that, oh, let's check the seller, then what is the fact that the seller is a flipper? You know, the rancher should either be responsible or should not be responsible.
Okay, should either be responsible or not responsible. Why is he only responsible?
For the buzzer result.
Why is he only responsible in part?
Right.
Right. Why does he get this discounted rate of liability? Who's troubled by that question?
Rashi.
Rashi says, what does Rashi do bother? Because he's bothered by that question, what does he read into the Gemara? How does he explain the decision?
Oh, he explains it that because they're not Rabbar Mechila, right? So therefore they can't do Shara.
Hold off on that.
I mean, typically that was the case, but in this case...
Yeah, well, let's just talk about as between the seller and the rancher. Why is there a discount?
Because it's just a case of pshara.
Yeah, it's a case of pshara, exactly. It was a pshara between the two of them.
Meaning, it seems like the Gemara was unsure. So this is Rami Bar Chama. It seems like Rami Bar Chama kind of saw the equities going both ways. And how is the rancher supposed to know about the bad teeth? He put food. Right, so this is not a real negligence. So what did he do? He split the loss. He made the seller bear some of the loss. And he made the rancher bear some of the loss by only partially remunerating the seller. Correct?
Yeah.
So it was a pshara. That's Rashi's reading of the Gemara. What does the Rush infer from here? What's this? What does this Gemara prove as a legal principle?
You can have a case of pshara as it did.
Great. Good, right? So the Rush thinks he could prove from here that there are cases of pshara that are really did. Does everybody agree with that inference? Is that a good proof, bad proof? Josh, good proof, bad proof?
I like it. I think it's a good proof.
You think it's a good proof? Why do you think it's a good proof?
Because it's a case of not knowing. It's a case of pshara, and still they're ruling that it's a pshara.
Okay.
Meaning,
it's not that they agree to Pshara or anything. Instead, there's a third party that's ruling.
Okay. So how do we know that the parties didn't agree to Pshara? I think Mara's case. Do we know that?
I guess I inferred that.
We don't really know. I mean, we don't really know what powers the Balei Din gave Rami Bar Kama in deciding the case.
Why would you have to make an edit then? Who's making him make the promise?
Which promise?
The seller.
That's a good question.
I got you,
man. Well, what do you mean, why would he have to promise?
I think the seller has to promise that you didn't know.
Swear, yeah. Take a shvuah that he doesn't know.
Sure,
that.
Who's he giving shvuahs to? Just that's just between them two?
So you're saying that shows that they're operating under din?
I think that's
a nice idea. So you think there's something about the fact that they required a shvua that shows that they're operating under the aegis of din? It's an interesting thought. Yeah, there's also another idea you can make that Rami Bar Chama says hechi nidainu dainu lahai dina. How should we adjudicate this dispute with the language of din, which maybe sounds that they were in din mode, and then maybe the decision is still, you know, under that. Just that jurisdiction of din. So I think there's a way, as Josh said, to see this as a good proof. But we are lacking some information, right? We're lacking, like, did they authorize the Bezin Hainle Din Hainle Pshara to do either or? But I think both of your points are very valid. And the Rus certainly thinks that this is an awesome proof that sometimes the din, Hechin Dainu Lahai Dina, is to come out with a sock of Pshara. That's what the Rush thinks is tucked into this random Gemara and Hamafket. I think it's a pretty phenomenal principle to be extracted from this case. No? If you just read this Gemara, would you say, oh look, this Gemara proves that sometimes Pshara could be done under the aegis of Din. Any of you learned Hamafket before? No?
Great.
Eighth grade. So when you're learning it in eighth grade, you say, great proof that Pshara can be done pain. So, but the rush really pulls us out of this Gemara. So it's really a phenomenal principle of law that he's able to reconstruct from here.
It's kind of, like Tosus there says, like, yeah, no, it's totally not Pshara. This is just this is absolute din.
Yes, yeah, there's Tosus.
Open
Exactly. Tosos, the Ramban, and the Mochamos all say this is not even, it's not even a Pshara ruling. It's unique to Rashi's take on the case that Sugya is Pshara. But even if you concede Rashi's reading of the Gemara that it's Pshara, as Josh points out, it's not obvious that the Dayanim were only operating in din mode, right? It could very well be that maybe he turned to them and said, how could we adjudicate this case? There's no din. So authorize me to do pshara. And they go, what's the pshara here? Let you take a shavua that you didn't know and then you pay half. I mean, the Gemara oftentimes doesn't give us the full facts of the case. The Rush is saying, no, this was a pure din decision and nevertheless the output was pshara. So I just want to... There are two levels of chidushim in the Rosh's reading of the sugya. What Tzachari is pointing out, and what I'm pointing out. Now, look what he says. So, let me just make one more point. So, the Rosh concludes this. This is where the Shulchan Aruch gets his language from. So, Benji Kolze. Or you can't just get rid of the case, you gotta impose a resolution. Very important.
Yeah. Cases and the disputes, so you need to come up with some resolution.
Yeah, so notice that he's explicitly emphasizing the role of the courts in creating shalom bolam.
Right.
Otherwise, it would be perfectly permissible whenever din is indeterminate, just kick it back into the world, right? Why can't you have games that end in a tie? Right?
No tie. Right.
So his point is that it's destructive of shalom to allow cases to remain unresolved. Right?
Yeah,
and then we get what we saw in the Shulchan Aruch. Exactly. But I just want to point out what's not on the Shulchan Aruch is this explicit concern of the Rush, Kedei Lahatil Shalom Bo'olam. Okay? I just want to point out that he's explicit about that value.
But then how do you explain, like, Kol Dal Dvar?
That's also Shalom, because you need some definite resolution.
No, because eventually... Yeah.
Right, it's an arbitrary resolution that just extinguishes the dispute. Right? Okay, so now I want to make one more diak in this little discussion of the Sugim Bav Metzia. This idea of, were the litigation to be between the Yesomim and the Apotropis, Rashi says, what? Why couldn't this case have been, why couldn't the same resolution have been imposed had the dispute been between the Yesomim and the Apotropis, as opposed to the seller and the rancher? Josh?
Because it says, Lavnei Nechilin here, he thinks that when you do Pshara, that means that, like, oh, in reality, maybe they should have paid nothing, but they're being mofel, and they're going to pay a little bit, but they can't agree to that if they're,
So he characterizes Pshara as working through the mechanism of Mechila. Yes? That's why Pshara is not an option when it comes to the Yesomim.
So it's not really Mechila.
So I want to say two things here. So, number one, that's a Chiddush, I think, to say that the mechanism through Pshara is always Mechila. I'd say you have these rights, but then you're actually Mochel when you agree to do Pshara. A Yesom can't agree to do that. So, I think it's an interesting question, as Josh points out, is that really the right mechanism of, is it Mechila, or is it Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, and you could always opt into Lifnei Mishuras Hadin? So that's one question. But I want to just push beyond that even and say, I think it's even more of a Chiddush in this case. Why? Why is Mechila even... So it's an open question whether these Psharas work, maybe this is for sure, a pshara agreed to the specific content of the pshara when it's agreed to by the parties, maybe that's mechila, right? So like in our case, Ravina knew he could get half, but he's mochel to get the agar natar amount. Maybe when they empower the bezdin to do pshara, that's also that mechila. But would you say that the pshara of Al-Karkach and Bali Din that the Rosh is talking about, that works Mitan Lechila? I thought the whole point was that's a koach din of Bezdin to spit out a pshara in some cases. So if the Rush is right that the Sugya Namafgid is really a koach din, and sometimes koach din gives you the power to do pshara, so is it right to say that there's Mechila going on? That there's Mechila of the litigant such that had the Yesomim been a party to the litigation, that the Bezdin would be blocked from imposing a Pshara because they're labanei Mechila Ninu? Kobe?
The mechanism through which that Bezdin can force you to do Pshara, that can force you to be Mokal.
Yeah. You could say something along those lines. That even when Bezdin's operating Betoras Din, if practically they're doing a Pshara, they're imposing a requirement of Mechila on you. Yeah. That's a nice way of thinking about it. Although it's not conceptually so obvious that would be the mechanism. You might say, no, like, if they're imposing a pshara as a din, and there's no mechila on your side, they're saying this is what the law... What is mechila if not forgoing the actual din that you're entitled to? Right, this is where we get into those vicious cycles. Well, what's din and what's pshara? So the thought is, well, yes, to get to a pshara resolution, I guess you're saying be mochel on your rights in some way. But the whole point is that there's no separate right that you're entitled to that you're being asked to be mochel on when it's hechashena davar yachal levarer berayos and blah, blah, blah. You see my point?
Yeah,
I see your point. Yeah, you also see your own point. Right? Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Does everybody see the issue? Anybody have thoughts on this? Do you think that comment in Rashi is a problem? So, meaning, do you like Kobe's formulation better or my counter formulation? Josh?
I think
I was just going to say, is it possible that this mafila is actually like an anti-mafila? Like, it's not that you have a right and that you're being mofel to it, it's that you're being mofel that I'm going to actually scratch that. That doesn't make any sense.
So it's one of those cycles, right? It's like, Daniel.
It's really weird. Maybe you could say that theoretically it is all mikvah bestin, but they have to have the ability to be mokal.
Yeah.
Like, even if it was mikvah bestin, they still have to have the ability to be mokal. Otherwise, the power of bestin would, like, I think there has to be the ability for them to be
right.
Shara even without bestin. And once they can't even do without bestin, in fact, they can't force it.
It's interesting.
Even though it's two different
species. Yeah. Kobe, is that what you were saying, or is Daniel saying a little differently from what you were saying?
A little bit differently.
Yeah, I think I like that formulation, meaning you're saying that basically, in order to have a koach to do pshara is a type of mechila. That's just kind of what it is. And yisomim are protected from that type of being forced to be mochel in anything. Is that your... I think we still get into the conceptual issues of, well, what are you being mochel on if there's no din on it? But another way of putting it is that mechila here doesn't mean this technical sense of being required to waive or accept. Yisomim labanei mechila ninu is really a broader halachic principle that we want to give the maximal charitable halachic position to the yisomim. So the same thing that explains why Yisomim La B'nei Mechila Ninu also explains why a pshara wouldn't be imposed on the Yisomim. But that's a little bit of a twist on what you're saying. But it's a way of saying that without getting into, oh, Mechila assumes that you're waiving some particular halachic right that you have antecedently. Right? So Yisomim La B'nei Mechila Ninu just means, like, oh, courts are obligated to maximize the halachic position of Yisomim. That's evidenced by, even though the courts can be vocal for other people, they can't vote for Yisomim. That same reason explains why Yisomim are labanei pshara. I think that would be like my the cleanest, the most elegant conceptual read of the Gemara without getting into the cycle of mechila din. Yeah.
That'd be consistent with the other policy where they didn't be towing.
Yeah, exactly. That's not about mechila or non-mechila. It's about, you know, making the best case for the Yisomim. Yeah, great point. So now we turn to the Shavuos Yaakov. Okay, so let me just to summarize. The Rosh does yeoman spade work in developing this halachic principle of pshara being a form of din. He pulls it out of the sugya in Bamitzia, which is really nice. He emphasizes the value of shalom in putting an end to these disputes. And again, I just think he's the best formulation right now, this notion that it's din ke'ein apshara. That it's through this power of din that the Beis Din has, and pshara becomes a subset of din in these cases. So let's move to the Shavuos Yaakov. In Chelek Aleph, Siman Kuf Tes, I gave you a bit of a history of the Shavuos Yaakov here. So he's from Prague, 17th century. He moved around, you know, the Rhine area. And his tshuvas of the Shavuos Yaakov were very, very influential on later poskim. So what's going on in this case in Chelek Aleph? What was the dispute about? This is a major issue that the Rishonim talk about. A lot of tshuvas or Rashbas about this topic. So what's Rav Yaakov Reischer worried about here? What was the case? Eitan, did you get a chance to see the case?
We didn't read the case.
Yeah, I mean, the case is not so important, she is, but it's fun.
It sounds like it's someone who marries off his daughter.
I'll just tell you since you read it in advance. So it's about somebody gave their daughter a dowry. She died pretty early in the marriage, and there was this concern there that the money should go back to the parents' estate, not to the husband. There's always this worry about the flow of money, right? So if they're married for a short time, why should the wife's family lose the money they put into the marriage if the marriage didn't really last long?
That's the issue.
What's the situation with the kid, though?
Yeah, so a lot of these rules depend on how long, if they had a kid, how long was the kid alive for? Here, the kid didn't last long either, right? He died, I think, within 8 days, right?
Yeah.
That was the issue. So what does the Shvos Yaakov respond? He says, look, you cited all these tshuvos that are really complicated. It's not really clear how the halacha would apply to this case. Ha'arichas benidon zehu achle mosar. It's all gratuitous. Why? Because these issues have been spoken about. See the tshuvos of the Avodas HaGirshuni, who cites all the Rishonim and Achronim. And what did he conclude? Da'al kol panim midei sveika lo nafka. Like, after you tally up all the Rishonim and all the views about this issue, we still remain with the halachic suffix. So notice here, it's very clear that it's about the indeterminacy of what?
The halacha,
not the facts of the case, right? In the rush, it's a little ambiguous what that indeterminacy. So here, it's halachic indeterminacy, which is very important. And so what happens when there's halachic indeterminacy? What does he say? And he's citing the Avodas HaGirshuni on this. What should you do? Pshara. Yesh lefasher hadavar derech pesher. And then he cites the Avodas HaGirshuni again, who says, had the case come before me, so who wants to read this line? Volunteer. Ariel, you want to take a stab at that line for us? Oh. Yeah, so that's really important. What would he have done in this case? He would have done pshar even about parchas of Bali Din. Where does he get that principle of jurisprudence from? Chusa Rush, exactly what we just saw. He says, I'm going to apply that principle here, and I'm going to impose a pshar about parchas of Bali Din. And he adds in a one-line further explanation to explain why this is the case. He cites the Rush, he cites the Shulchan Aruch in Yud Beis, he cites the Sma in Yud Beis, and what does he add? Yeah.
When the din doesn't have an ability to show the answer to this case, the pshara becomes the din.
Yes, he's very clear that the pshara is the din, or the din is the pshara in this case. There's a bit of a, you know, paradox. You're like a this sentence is false paradox. Right? It's true only if it's false, and it's false only if it's true. Right, you guys know that this sentence is false paradox?
We do now.
What?
We do now.
You do now, right? So this sentence is false is true only if this sentence is false. So you get that it's true only if it's false, and it's false only if it's true. Logicians really worry about these type of things. So you kind of get that over here. Because Kol Shein Adar Yachol is Bar Al Pi Adin, Pshar 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 Adino. What do you mean? It is this Bar Al Pi Adin because of Pshara. Alright, so here it's not really a problem, right? Because he just means, were Pshara not a principle of Din, it would be In Adar Yachol is Bar Al Pi Adin. But once Pshara becomes part of the toolkit of Din, then it is Pshara is Bar Al Pi Adin. Something like that.
Is there a primacy you're supposed to look at the din before the
pshara? Well, remember, pshara itself is a type of din. Well, yes, it sounds like you're supposed to exhaust other principles of din.
Like if we had the chart of the 1, 2, 3 from last year, but he's still.
Well, I'll say this. I'll say, here's din. Here's the set of din, right? So it would be more fun to say, here's the din set. I don't know what sign you need. You equal sign for a set? Probably something more formal to do. Maybe you do it inside, right? You do it inside and say din. So the set of din is give me some din principles. Migo, shvua, right? Blah blah blah. And then you have here pshara. So you would say, well, in the set of things that are din, you first should exhaust, migo, exhaust shvua. Then once you exhaust everything else, then pshara is the way to go. Something like that. That's the chloku here, whatever it is. But I think what the nice thing that about this phrase is he's very clear that the pshara bezeh hainudino, that this species of pshara is a form of din.
Okay, we have some hands. So let's start with Ned.
Is Pshara a built-in mechanism to deal with the limitations of the judge's comprehension of halacha, or is halacha itself does not cover every case?
Yeah, I think the language that you get in these Rishonim is clearly the latter. So it's not that from the epistemic standpoint of the Dayan, his ignorance will lead him to not be able to apply the law in the right case. It's that halacha is genuinely, the metaphysics of halacha, or from a metaphysical perspective, the halacha is indeterminate in some cases. That's the sense you get, right?
Because here he seems to just, here's to say what he's teaching. The different Rishonim that are thrown in, like, it sounds like he tried to adjudicate it using standard halacha, and it resulted in a contradictory conclusion.
Well, he's saying that what is like Rishuni concluded after analyzing all the Rishonim that there's still halachic indeterminacy. Mide sveka lo nafka.
What kind of subject? Is it subject that emerges from contradictory sukkin? Was it?
Yeah. So what's lihis barer, right? Is that from the vantage, you're saying from the agent relative view of the Dayan?
Yeah.
Or is it from like the halachic material itself is indeterminate? Yeah. Any of the other sources weigh in on that?
I think Rihanna's from last time was pretty clear about that. But
see, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to know from these sources. Yeah. Well, let's look for a second at this other formulation. So let's keep Ned's distinction in mind and see if anybody takes a stance on that distinction. Josh, we had a hand, right?
I was just gonna say I felt like the reading kind of made it seem like Pshara was outside of the substantive din, and then we just like
here
like,
in the in Shvaz Yaakov.
Like, only if there's nothing else, then we take this back in the substantive and we just like knock it into the din for like this one case.
Okay, what he still says Pshara is that Hainu Dino.
Yeah,
and he's using it to say to explain why you could do it about Parakach of the Bali Dinim.
Yeah, I'm just saying to me it sounds like it's like only in this case would be Pshara like be like.
So again, I think it's totally fine for some halachos of din to have very limited application, right? I'm sure there are many principles of din that are very limited. So it's okay for there to be a limited type of pshara, a limited application to that pshara.
Right. Great. Any other thoughts on this, Shvus Yaakov? Everybody's on board for this reading? Good. Quick look at Rabbeinu Tam and Sefer Yashar, Siman Reish and Tess. Like every other piece in Sefer Yashar, it's very difficult to read. So let's just zero in on this one phrase. He says, "Im shnayim masu pshara." So two pashronim, two dayanim du pshara ba karcham shabal edinim. When would that be? When would you do pshara ba? When would two dayanim du pshara against the will of the bal edinim? Kigon sherau she'ein hadavar tali bedin v'sha'at tzricha pshara ein yicholam lachta. Then the litigants are automatically bound by that decision. They can't back out of it. So Rabbeinu Tam here in Sefer HaYashar, Reish Min Tes, seems to appears to describe a category of pshara that could be bal karchach shabal edinim, like the Rush and the Shvus Yaakov and the Sma and the Shulchan Aruch. What types of cases are those that would be, when would he do pshara bal karchach shabal edinim here? What's Rabbeinu Tam's view? Okay, go and what? What are the...
When it's not, when they... I guess somewhere before, where there's no clear answer. And
whoa. So we have Ned in mind right now. Yeah. So the other Rishonim said, Kigon Shein Adav Yachol is Barer. This Barer is clearly...
Different than Shein Adav Yachol.
Well, it's not clearly different. It might be different. But it's clear... This Barer is clearly... it can't be discerned. It can't be clarified through them. Notice this phrase of Rabbeinu Tam in Sefer HaYashar. Shein Adavar Tali Bedin, what does that mean?
Not a category covered by them.
Yeah, or that the adjudication, the outcome, should not, or it doesn't depend on them. So this is a very, I think, cool phrase, which suggests that some cases really don't depend on them. And they're not, they ought not be determined by din, or they don't depend on din. Everybody see that? So I think, Ned, isn't this a little bit of a stronger phrase? And then he says, Vishat Sricha Pshara.
which gets back to that formulation of the Riyaz, maybe, that the exigencies of the time, right, or some local consideration, makes it the case that it requires pshara. Right? The needs of the hour require pshara, which sounds more formal, that just there are certain types of cases that are better handled by pshara than by din. This would suggest that the dayanim have power to do pshara, bal karcha the bali dinim, if they decide that the exigencies of the case are better handled by pshara. Is that, do you agree with that reading? It's very dangerous. I don't say dangerous, but see, if you look at the progression, you start off with a very neat principle. Courts do din, and they need the permission of the bali dinim to do pshara. Okay. And then you go, well, we have the rush, based on the gemara mafkid. Some cases they can do pshar bal karcha the bali dinim also. When the din is indeterminate. They say, wait, maybe if you go further and say they can do pshar bal karcha the bali dinim if they decide that the needs of the hour require pshara rather than din. Yes? Even if there is a din about it, you could say, oh, you can still force them into pshara if you think pshara is a better resolution. Do you agree with that reading? So notice that's already giving the Beis Din much broader discretion when they could impose pshara. Possibly. Good. Let's look at one other formulation. Well, let's look at the Netziv's formulation, because I think the Netziv's formulation goes even further. And then I want to come back to the Meshech Chachma. So, everybody good to go on to the Netziv in the Meshev Davar? Who had a chance to see the Dov?
Can I ask for the Rebbe of Talmud? He doesn't sound confident. There's a thing in the Gemara about, I should know this, it might sound like the exact thing. I don't see how, like, he gives a bunch of things. I don't see how you can argue that as a legal basis as much as he's trying to explain a Gemara, but this does not sound like a confident thing that you would act on.
Yeah.
He's in a Pesach Halacha.
Safer Yashar, he's just right. He's just.
If this was in his responses, then that would be one thing. But
yeah, so as a normative.
Even here, the Inami does not sound the sort of confidence you would expect from Pesach Dick.
Yeah, that's true. But so I think if we were interested in which principles should be adopted as normative, you're right. But just from our perspective of sheer analyzing the theoretical claims of Rishonim, this principle would have it's a very radical principle, right? Both because it gives the dayanim discretion to sidestep in if the shah is shikab shara, and moreover, it seems to suggest on the net point that there are some types of disputes that are not holy in it.
I don't know if it's kind of that, but there's two differences that Korban has. Viewing, I think Shur Dani is being from the Hakkabetz and Hakka.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if that relates to the Russian Bagat's idea. Once it's an idea of Hakkabetz and Hakka,
you have broad powers anyway.
It doesn't only ask to just give it to this person or that person, but it can also be, okay, I think it's more of his, but maybe his, so I'm going to split it.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a very nice connection. So let's look at the Netziv in the Meshev Davar Gimel Yod. So we don't really know much about the dispute here, although it seems like it was a dispute between two different groups of the public. So it was the Rabbim against the Rabbim. And what does the Netziv say that's so fascinating? He begins by saying, who had a chance to see this Meshev Davar? Anybody get a chance to see it? No one? Just Har, you saw it? Yeah, so he opens by saying what? He says, what does he start off by saying? This is a Inyan Umum. So this is a very clouded topic.
There's not really a lot of material on this.
Yeah, so read that phrase that's highlighted.
Yeah, the Inyan Umum Shagamara Ma'uta.
Vaspikos Alpishino Hanyanin Rubin. So there's not much more about this topic, and the doubts that arise based on just changing details are great.
Right, so there's really no firm halachic ground here with which to adjudicate. Okay?
And the next line is great. Ruf shut mikaune basrai shteiwan yanim matim debrehem lefira osainyan. They, you know, change their opinion based off the specific sort of case. Umiyakim daikam alpi remes the gemara. And, you know, they, like, you know, beautify their position based off some hints of the gemara.
Yeah, meaning it's, they have very little halachic basis from which to draw clear conclusions.
Right.
And then this last line, I think, here is very important.
And any dayan will just, you know, compare one case to another, differently than another dayan, to establish the din based on his opinion.
Yeah, so does this sound like Ned's, you know, that coming back to Ned's point that there's some metaphysical indeterminacy here in the halacha? It's just like there's, it's not determined. That's what I would think, right? Given yonim elu ein halachos chatuchos, there's like no clear cut halachos on these things, so there's no real good din to apply here. Do you agree, Ned?
In Sid's view, halacha in general doesn't really look small. I think it works with his view. I don't know if he said it's ever any determinants.
Great. Just Lishitasa.
Yeah. I don't know if you even devoted to Metzilok.
Okay. So then all the more so, right? And then he says, so then his first argument is there are no halachos chatuchos here, but then he says what? So this is a very fascinating consideration. He's saying, I don't know what the din would be here, because there's no terra firma in halacha to decide this case. But even if I did know what the din would be, it wouldn't put an end to the dispute, right? Because the rabbim would still fight over, they would still fight with each other, regardless of my psak. Does everybody see that in the... Okay, so why is that relevant?
And Yerushalmi says, great, he's reading all the same thing. Nasa din, nasa emes, nasa emes, nasa shalom. Says, wait, if you're doing din, that should be doing truth. And if you're doing truth, that should be doing shalom. And then Ziv says...
Yeah, I don't know if he's saying they're all the same thing, or that one brings about the other. So if you're doing good din, that's emes, and if you're doing emes, then emes will lead to shalom.
Right, he's saying they should. And then Ziv himself says, aval, and in...
Whoa!
But if
you guys hear that?
To lead to shalom, you must do shalom.
That's like a wild halakhic conclusion to draw from Yerushalmi that's working off of Mishnah and Avos, right? About shlosha dvarim olam kayam. So what does Yerushalmi say? Yerushalmi says, Nasa, let's just focus on the, we get this thing, saying Nasa din, do it this way. So you have Nasa din, that implies, that's supposed to lead to Nasa MS, and if Nasa MS, that's going to get you to Nasa Shal. Very nice description, right? If you do justice, it's going to bring about peace. Right, so if you do this, it brings this, and if you do this, it brings out shalom. What does the Nesiv argue based on that?
Well, if the din won't lead to shalom, therefore, by Moses Collins, one should not do the din.
That's right. That's like a law of logic that if you negate this, then you negate that. Right? So if you think that if it's raining, then the ground is wet, then if the ground's not wet, that shows it's not raining. So the idea is, he says, if it's not nasa shalom, so if the psak din wouldn't arrive at shalom, then that shows you that you didn't do din. Right? So it's like, if you didn't do nasa shalom, then you didn't do That's what it means over here. Aval ima din eno yachal lahavili de shalom. So you ought not do din in that case. You ought instead do pshara. Hechachlachsoso pshara. Which is a very radical chiddush, because until now we saw poskim saying, put aside a bit of tam for a second, that if there's no din, then you ought to do pshara. Here he's saying there is a din, that there might be very well be a din that governs this case, but a din that doesn't bring about a stable resolution is not the type of din you ought to do, and in that type of case, you ought to do shalom. You ought to do pshara. That's very congenial to the Rabbeinu Tam. Right? Oh, there are some things that you see are ino taloi b'din kasha asha tzricha l'pshara. And so that means there is a din that could be applied, but given the practical outcome of applying din, it's not going to be, for the tziv in particular, it's not going to be nasa shalom, then you ought not do din. If you ought not do din, then you ought to do pshara. Does everybody see that? Pretty extraordinary tziv. Let's take hands, Josh and then Ned.
I just want to be clear. The reason he thinks it won't be shalom is just because he thinks people are going to argue about whether or not it was the right din, right?
No. I think even with the din Torah, people will still fight about it.
But why are they fighting?
Lo yishar, because they, people like to fight.
Oh, that's why? I assumed it was because they would be arguing about, like, the details.
No, I think it's kasha lahachriya harabim hamischai ben al pi din Torah. It's hard to force the masses that are going to be found liable to abide by the din Torah.
Everything ever?
If you have, shoftim b'shotrim titein lecha, if you have a good enforcement mechanism, maybe. But look, I mean, this is like a huge policy question in the law, right? I mean, so do you want to make something illegal if you can't really regulate it? Right. So like sometimes you legalize, then you just get like an abortion cases. So you criminalize abortion, then you just get a black market for abortion that you can't regulate, right? Or for all these types of things. So it's a similar type of consideration here. Ned?
I mean, we've seen all the herbs of the things inside of that pshara is an issue to offer pshara. Why are we putting it up to the... Why did the Baalim go vote? I mean, if it's... We're going to offer them pshara. Let's say it's a case where there's a term halacha, termed in. So why should the Baalim get a sense?
Just automatically do pshara whenever you want.
Yeah.
Well, I think the Nitziv is saying that you don't need their consent in these types of cases. You only need their consent in cases where, you know, din would also bring about a good resolution, maybe. Like, din would also achieve a stable resolution. That's when you need their consent. But in any case where din won't do the job, pshara is... The Dayanim has automatic power to do pshara. Pretty radical.
So, what is din accomplishing? That's the question.
So, I guess in a lot of cases, the thought is that din does accomplish shalom. I guess in his view.
And what is it? If din is a system, what is din accomplishing when it's not accomplishing? When it's not accomplishing shalom?
Not much. Maybe.
What is its purpose? Why does it exist? Why is it halacha?
Yeah, it's only there, arguably, if it's going to achieve the right result. Arguably. Rumi?
I'm just kind of wondering how the Nitziv deals. Like, what if you would do pshara and then also wouldn't be the shalom? Like, it almost undermines.
If what?
If you would do pshara and then also wouldn't be the shalom.
Right. What happens then?
The way it articulates it, like, the rabbi are never going to agree. I don't know. Like, when I like think about how that would look in society today, it'd be like, yeah, okay, they'd always be
disaster.
So then, like,
right.
It doesn't really matter what you do.
Yeah, there's no rule of law anymore.
There's no way to do pshara in a way to make everyone feel good. Unless what he means is that if we can lessen half, you know, we can achieve a certain threshold of like content or whatever, then...
Right, different degrees. Some cases you get more or less degrees of content. Yeah, it's very hard to know. But you also, this is a very big expansion of the koach bezin to do pshara bal karcha. Hey, Dan, do you have a hand?
I mean, it seems also that he holds the shard is not a deen at all. He's taken out of the legal aspect.
You think so?
Yeah, because he says later on, he also says, Kofi no mina's a deen, so like, you're a deen.
Ah, So you don't think he's on the... You think that he's in the camp, that this is Pshara Bal Korchach Shel Bal Edinim, but this is not Pshara that falls under the set of Din. Yeah. It's an interesting point. It's a very interesting point. So let's look here at the second part of the Netziv's Tshuva. So go ahead, Zechariah.
Yeah, so, and this
reads
the Gemara. So,
all right, so whereas the Rush went to the Gemara in Bava Metzia, the Netziv goes to the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So what? How does he prove this from the, or how does he try to prove this from Sanhedrin?
We only find that this pasuk, this kind of like ashara, would be relevant for pshara in case we're forcing people to do pshara. Dealing with whole pshara, shalom nasa ela beratzad ba'adinim, harim yistama yodim, utuchim mishneyat pasharim, shal yitu hapshara b'tzadeh, but yosim yitavira. Then lo tash b'kath, harim yin hud asyan ha'shayim. So we don't need a pasuk to tell us about, you know, mutual negotiations where right, everyone is party to every single detail because, you know, everyone's going to make sure everything's equal and balanced.
So, let me say a little differently. I think he's saying, the Gemara says you should do pshara justly, fairly.
Yeah.
Right? Tzedek, tzedek, kirdav, and pshara. What type of pshara is that? Is that pshara with the consent of the parties? Or is that pshara bal karcham of the parties? Right? So is it the species that the Rush is talking about? Or the one that the Gemara is talking about where you're authorized by the parties? And it seems as it can't be talking about the one where you're authorized by the parties to do pshara. Why? Because then it's on them to make sure that you're a fair guy when they choose you. And if they don't choose fair dayanim or fair pashranim, that's like they're bringing the loss upon themselves. It's not an obvious claim at all. But he's asserting that. And so he says, when the Gemara says you have to do tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, and pshara, it's clearly talking about pshara where you're not authorized by the litigant to do it. That's the argument of this section.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you have their authorization, if they consented to your doing pshara, then there are already checks and balances hammered into their consent, i.e. that they consented to your doing it. It's only when you're doing it on your own that you're obligated to do it in this fair way. See that, Skarja?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what type of case is it then? Okay, so notice that EF Shal Hamid is that Al Din sounds like there's no way to apply Din to this case, or it would be bad to apply Din to this case. Not necessarily that Din is indeterminate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what the Tana is asking. In what circumstance do we force people to do
Shara? Yeah. And the Gemara tells us, like in the case of the two boats that are trying to go up out the straits at the same time, or the two wagons trying to go up the hill at the same time, Valpi Omek Hadin, Ein Lanu B'Malachof Es She'eno Te'una She'telech Le'ibud, right? Based on Din, there's no basis to force one to go before the other. What would happen if we did Omek Hadin? Yeah, so based on the pure principles of Din, what would happen? They'd fight it out, or they'd be stuck. Or literally, there would be a violent resolution. Okay, so what does he say?
So, about
Notice how there are two ways you could think about that case. You might think about that case as having shown that there are cases where there is no din. Right? Meaning, that case in Sanhedrin where the two boats are trying to go at the same time, the point is there's no din that applies in that case. That's one way to look at it. Well, see, that's how the Meshech Chachma looks at it. That's not the way the Netziv looks at it. How does the Netziv look at it? There is a din that applies to that case. Just the din achieves a violent resolution, a bad result, right? It's bad in what sense? That is, ein zeh mishpat shalom. Notice how nicely this coheres with the language of the Riyaz, that sometimes it's kasha leilech achar adin, right? Based off the contingencies of the circumstance. So he's thinking that din applies to this case, but it gets bad results when applied, okay, which is different from the view that others extract from that Gemara, that there's no din applicable in that type of case. Okay, so go on, Zecharia.
Yeah.
Let me just say again that one is a moral assessment, evaluating the goodness and the badness of the result. The other one is about, we could call this the indeterminacy, metaphysical or epistemic indeterminacy, about there not being a legal result in the case. Yes? Okay.
We force them against to not do midas adin, and we obligate them to do shara.
Right, so that's consistent with thinking there is a din that applies, but we intentionally pull the parties away from a din resolution. So look, he gets into that riyaz, and he says, remember the riyaz connected pshara to the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed, and Beis HaMikdash did you name all the Torah? So he makes the same connection, and he says this.
So that they didn't want to give up on cases of din, even though that din would not be the shalom, and really they should have been forced to do shalom. Anything that's between two groups. We can't just hope that, once one party triumphs over the other, they're just going to be quiet and the machlokes will be over.
So the tov and the yashar is to basically have some sort of pshara that emerges from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So that's a pretty extraordinary psak of the Netziv, no? So you see it's a real expansion of pshara bal korcho shebal yedinim. So it's an application, it's a major expansion of this principle. Philosophically or conceptually, it's a huge chiddush, but consistent with the riyaz, that we're evaluating din and determining whether to apply it based on, we'll say, moral considerations about the goodness or the badness of the result in bringing about shalom. And then a third point, just to reinforce, again, is that he's not saying that pshara becomes din in these cases. In fact, his whole point is that you're not supposed to be doing a type of din in these cases. Okay, let's just close by looking very quickly at the Meshech Chachma, who just does something different with that Gemara, and then we'll call it a day here. Unless somebody's running. Anybody running somewhere? No? Ned, you're running somewhere? Okay, we've got 2 minutes, 2 minutes. So we have the Meshech Chachma, here in Perek Tes Zayin in Dvarim, Tzedek Tirdof, and he cites the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Hayu Shteim Krovos, Shteim Rechokos, Hadal Pshar B'neim, Malos Char Zulazu, yes? How does he read this? Anybody see this Meshech Chachma? Raise your hand if you saw the Meshech Chachma. Just Zecharia, Zecharia, tell us. Perish.
Yeah, Perish. Pshara, umakum she'in din al-sets. Pshara, where there is no din.
Oh, so notice how he reads that Gemara in Sanhedrin differently from the Netziv.
Yeah.
Right, the whole point about the Shtein Krovo, Shtein Rechoko is that no din is applicable, as opposed to saying a din is applicable, that means, either could go or and they'd harm each other. Lachain.
Lachain, kima she'in al-set din, mitzvah of Pshara.
Yeah.
Mitzvah al-bali din. She'kbali din, zuhim l'chashe. And it's mitzvah not of the dayan, but on the litigants.
Yeah, which is a very interesting view. But what I wanted to take away for now is the fact that he thinks that the mitzvah lefasher is precisely because din is indeterminate. Right? That's where the mitzvah pshara comes in. He's not saying, like the Rush, that the pshara becomes din. He doesn't get into that at all. He just thinks that The indeterminacy of din will make it the case that there's at least a mitzvah lefasher in such cases. Okay, That's all I need to take out of the Meshech Chachamah for now. So in the next year, we'll just do, we're basically done with Pshara. I briefly want to discuss, I briefly want to discuss, can we do 5 more minutes now? And then just be done with Pshara and Din? Yes. Okay, 5 minutes now, we're going to be done with Pshara and Din. Great. So I briefly just want to discuss, sorry, Josh, you look like you're done for the day. You have to go, Josh?
No.
You could go if you have to go.
No worries.
Okay. So let's think. I want to just wrap this up by, so far we've been looking at this discussion, this relationship between Pshara and Din, from the Pshara side. Meaning, does Bez Din have the right to impose a Pshara as a form of Din? Right? Is a Pshara Bezet Hanyadino? I just think it's interesting to also consider this from the other side, which is, are there some cases where something that's presented as din in the Gemara is in fact a ruling based on Pshara? Now you might say the Rush's example above Metzia Membez, right, with the cow losing its teeth example, is an example of that. Right, where the Gemara just presents it as Heikul Dainu Dainu Laidina. And they say Basa Rizol, and that's really grounded in a type of Pshara. So maybe that's one type of example of this. But that's still a little different, because that's a story about litigation, and we're told about how the Dayan ruled in that case, that he was ruling on the basis of Pshara. That's still very much, I would say, procedurally driven, by like, here's a court case, and the Psak is based on Pshara. What about cases where the Din in Shulchan Aruch itself is really a din grounded in Pshara considerations? Everybody see that? See how it's a different... It's a very much related issue, trying again to break up the distinction between Pshara and Din, but looking at it from a different perspective. It's like, if you were to look in Shulchan Aruch or the Gemara, how many actual dinim are truly Pshara in disguise? So one great source on this is Rav Shimon Shkap and Shari Yosher, Shar Hei Perik Yud. He notes that Sumchus, remember Sumchus? Sumchus holds that whenever moment of lichul b'safek, the paskin yachloku. That's Sumchus' shita. It's against the chachamim. So whenever you have a safek mamon, you split it. Is that a din or is that a pshara? The chachamim say motzim yechaver al varaya. So what would you have said if you saw a Sumchus moment of lichul b'safek kolkin?
Pshara?
You would have said Pshara?
Same thing, I split it from different.
Yeah. Really?
No.
But it's, he's asking, what's the din whenever you have a suffix in mamonos? What's the din? Chamuk say motzim yechaver al varaya, some of us say split it. Same thing we saw, by the way, in suffix v'yavam, in Yavamos Lamed Zayin. Lamed Gimel or Lamed Zayin?
Lamed Zayin.
So in Yavamos Lamed Zayin, suffix v'yavam, if you go back to that discussion in Kamdina, Tosus, what did the Gemara say was the din? Safek v'yavam in all those cases?
Split it.
And Tosus says, this is even for the Chachamim who disagree. Some plus they acknowledge in a lot of cases that you do yachloku. Okay, so you literally just split it down the line. I think if you asked me, I would have said that's a din. Right? What else is din if not for the fact that it's the psak in the Gemara to do this whenever you have this type of case? No? You wouldn't have said that?
No.
Okay, you would have said that it's a pshara.
I mean, the Gemara needs to really have a psak, but somehow. I can see how you're saying it, but I don't know.
Okay.
It's unclear to me which is the right
reason. Right, so Rav Shimon Shkap says, Sumchus's view about yachloku and similar types of yachlokus, Nirla Niyaz Daiti Shed Din Chaluka B'chiyai Gavna Hu Inyam Pshara. This is a type of Pshara. V'ha-hevdel bazem mi Pshara da'alma. Why is it different than most Psharas? Da'hasma Baladina Mispasha Mirtzonam. There, in most cases, Pshara is with the consent of the Baladin. V'hacha hu Pshara Balkarcha Shabaliadin. Al-pi Mishpat Bezdin. Sheishlam Koach Al-zem Midin Shamayim. Notice, by the way, that Romy, I guess here he's thinking this as Mishpat Bezdin, but then again he's talking about Pshara Bal Karcha Shabaliyadin. But he's thinking of this as a pshara power that Bezdin has.
But I think what's striking about this is that this is a very precise psak. Ned, when we were talking earlier about what differentiates pshara from din, we were saying, is it precise, is it not precise? Here there's a very clear-cut halachic ruling about how these cases should be treated. Right there. Split them 50-50, that's the rule. And then Shimon's saying, that's really a din grounded in pshara. Is that okay, this category? Is this category sit well with you guys? So my point is that there's... I would have been surprised if he said that there are psakim in the Gemara about how to paskin on each case that are just rulings concretized in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch as pshara rulings. Like this is how a dayan ought to paskin in every case like this. But I think that's, again, a type of pshara that is din, a din that is pshara. But look at it from the other perspective. Romy, do you disagree?
Yeah, I think it just comes back to like how like vague our definitions of din, we allow the definition of din to be. Like they're coming to the situation and they're saying, okay, we have to resolve it a certain way. It doesn't mean that it din. Like,
but I'm saying the psak and the Shulchan Aruch is to split all these cases 50-50.
Okay. But that's what I'm saying. So yeah, if you're willing to now say that what din means is that Beit Din is gonna rule that way, then, and like, is it consistent with the rule? That means it's not
pshara.
Okay, I don't buy that.
So, what makes this pshara? Let's tease this out. What makes this pshara?
So, I would say
the
pshara is that presumably there's one person, like, you have something to be on. One of those people is right. Right? Yeah. Either the son is the son, or either he's the Yavim son, or the original father's son. And we don't know, so Beit Din has to just say, like, alright, we don't know, so we can't give you 100%, you 100%, because that's not fair. What's fair is to just say, you should get half, because...
But we see sometimes, but why is that different from Motzi Mechaber Elav Araya, which just says that there's a presumption in favor of the...
And I wouldn't say that, I would say that's a Shara kind of theory.
Whoa. Yeah, you're going to go there?
Yeah, I think Shara just means... Like,
meaning you're saying Motzi Mechaber Elav Araya is also a pshara.
Yeah. I think pshara is like a resolution when you don't know the clear kailah.
Any kol yasvekos is pshara?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Daniel doesn't like that.
I disagree. It's a non-action. Yeah. A non-action is a pshara.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to say that.
I think it's just that we've gone through like a bunch of, like, we've committed ourselves to the idea that pshara is like working things is like needs to be different in every single case, and if there's a uniform concept of anything, that's not true.
Yeah,
I think halacha considers resolutions as part of its halachic system.
Yeah, it's interesting. We need to think about this. We have another case to talk about. I feel like the Netziv says it's kasha lachriach esarabim to continue with midas adin, so I should let everyone go before there's a. Definitely an uprising against Shalom here. So let's stop here, even though we tried to finish it today. We'll spend 10 minutes on Tuesday just wrapping up the Pshara Din discussion, and then we'll talk about the Nosa Kalim and Shulchan Aruch Samini Zion. Good? Shavuot, guys.